I'm here at the Sweet Venues launch with Peter Antonio, who's got a show here. He's back at the Fringe, been here a few times with Happy Medium. My questions may get easier, but I wanted to start with a hard one, which was I've seen a lot of magic and mentalism shows over the years. I just wondered, as somebody that performs in that field, where's it come from that mentalists on TV and in shows have kind of moved in the direction of wanting to debunk mysticism?
Yeah, I think there's sort of... there's a bit of a vogue of it, of like... it's quite an easy thing to do, to sort of like debunk the mysticism of old and like point out like, oh, how stupid people are. And I think there's... it's sort of inbuilt in performers that it's, you want to like put yourself up on a pedestal, and I think by debunking it's sort of an easy way of sort of pointing out other people's flaws to make yourself look good. So I think it's quite an easy sort of trope to go into, and it's sort of, it started in sort of good faith with people sort of trying to explain how people were being defrauded. And then I think, as anything happens with sort of fashions and stuff like that, people have jumped on board and gone, oh, that's something we can do, and it's become like an easy go-to sort of hack move of just sort of trying to debunk things.
Yeah. There's a reason I'm asking, and it's from a theatre point of view, but I'll come to it. And it's also that most mentalists I talk to are extremely intelligent, and you know, they talk about the mind and the theories of the mind as part of their show. But you know, it was mentioned, it was years back, that the fact that you could create an apple in a laboratory doesn't disprove the existence of apples. And I guess the theatrical reason I'm asking is that when we just saw you demonstrating something, it's wonderfully mysterious about how does he do that. And if that's framed within, well, it's really easy to trick people, and I'm just not going to tell you that bit. But that's actually far less exciting than just opening it up to the whole vista of the unknown, isn't it? And that the unknown, and there's a lot of philosophy and a lot of physicists that talk about, we don't quite know or understand the mind. And surely that would be the right place for a mentalist performer to be in, rather than, hey, I can show you how to fake it.
Yeah, I think that's a lot where my shows come from, is because, like, they're like, I've spent a lot of time with sort of psychologists and hypnotists and those sorts of people, but I've also spent a lot of time with sort of psychics and mystics and shaman, and like there are parts in my show that I don't fully understand how they work. I just know that if I act in a certain way, these things happen. And for me, it's not about understanding how things work, because that's not the point of the show. And I think it's quite nice just to celebrate that there are things we don't know and things we'll never know, and like that sort of flavour to it, of just like, it becomes much less of a lecture then. And I think, like, because I want the show to be sort of comedy and fun, if I'm going like, oh, and there are seven theories of brain activity, it can be very easy just to sort of switch off, whereas like everyone loves an open box, sort of a mystery, those sorts of things.
So it's not just an NLP demo then?
No, I'm deeply suspicious of NLP. I worked with some NLP trainers, and there's some of it that's very good and some of it that is sort of classic con artistry, sort of cult building, and I'm sort of always very wary of it. But I figure, like, yeah, I just sort of try and learn everything and then just sort of siphon it through my brain.
I think I'm kind of preaching to the converted. I don't think I'm preaching at all, but I guess from a theatre-making point of view, what I'm saying is the shows always seem for me to have more kind of, I don't know, excitement when what we know and don't know goes right out to infinity.
Yeah, I think it's nicer just to... because also, you're not going to convince anyone, like, in an audience, if they come along, if they think that, like, mysticism is possible, then you're not going to not, like, convince them it isn't. And if they don't believe it, then you're not going to. And that's not the purpose of theatre, to convince something like that. It's just fun to sort of embrace the world and embrace sort of those things we don't know. And I quite like the idea of people leaving a show being like, I'm not really sure, like, exactly what just happened there. Like, something incredible happened and I don't understand it. And just enjoying that piece, because it's quite childlike in that way. Like, as you get older, you sort of lose those moments of, like, I don't really understand. Whereas, like, when you're a kid, like, everything's incredible. Like, the TV's incredible. And then we get to a point where we're just sort of a bit blasé about it.
So are there moments in your show where the person before you is a completely blank slate?
Yeah, there are times that, like, especially at the Fringe, you get sort of all sorts of people. So sometimes people are sort of really into it, and then other times I'm just a bit... they're an experience.
Yeah, so do you then have to have a routine around those aliens from another planet?
Yeah, I've got to a point now where I can sort of work to some extent with everyone, but normally, like, there'll be like the comedy focus of the show, and we'll have some fun and chat, and then we'll move on to someone else that I can work more readily with. But like with the show, people get chosen at random, so everyone's numbered as they come in, so it's sort of random. So I've tried to embrace that, because like when I started doing shows, I had a lot of people go like, oh, like I never get picked for those sorts of shows. And I realised that because there is sort of like a type of person that you pick, then the people that aren't that exact type of person sort of miss out on being, but it's like such a wonderful experience to be involved in that sort of show that I thought it'd be nice, just even if they're hard to work with, like it's not their fault, that's a failing on my ability to read them, so I should just try and include them and I just have to get better then.
Yeah. Now, I know of course the audiences are different every night, but how do you make sure as a performer that the routines don't get boring for you?
My show's sort of fully improvised, so everyone at the start of the show is asked to think of a question they'd always like to ask a psychic, and then it's my job throughout the show to sort of pick people and try and figure out what their question is and then provide a humorous answer. So the show is constantly changing because the questions that people think of, and you get sort of recurring ones, like sort of what are the lottery numbers and what colour's my underwear and things like that. But then like beyond that, just the scope of questions that people ask when you say like you can ask anything. If someone knew everything about the universe, what would you ask them? And there's just such an unending sort of options that it always keeps me on my toes as well.
Have you tried, or do you think you could do digital mentalism?
Sort of like mind reading like over the internet?
Well, yeah, so without any of those visual clues.
I don't know. I worked for a short while as like a telephone psychic just to sort of experience what it would be like, and I could still deliver sort of some of it, but it wasn't as accurate as I like, and I'm sort of really particular about just how accurate I can be about things.
Right. So did that mean that you were using mentalism and not using clairvoyance?
Yeah, so I was using sort of traditional oracle tools. So I was working with the tarot, and since I've designed like my own version of the tarot, which is sort of, I'm quite fascinated with the idea of like how the tarot works and things, and like not that the cards are magical in themselves, but like when you look at a piece of art and you sort of interpret it, that the tarot and then sort of oracle since then. So sort of it was applying that, and it was almost like art therapy, like talking to people through metaphor and trying to get them engaged that. So it was, yeah, sort of applying those and understanding how people work to deliver sort of psychic-style readings.
I guess we're right back on that borderland again, because you've got, you know, the likes of Rupert Sheldrake having his TED Talk band, and quite a lot of physicists that talk about what we don't know. And, you know, when you mention you design your own tarot, when you look at that, you know, are you looking at that as just kind of, this is just metaphorical for rationalist stuff, or there is a boundary?
Yeah, I think there's sort of a blurry boundary, and that's where I sort of love that boundary, like, because there's a point at which you go like, well, we don't know everything, and to like dismiss anything then is like the, I think dismissing things is like the new ignorance. So just to go like, well, that can't be possible, is exactly the same sort of thing that they were doing to sort of Greek philosophers and things when they say, oh, the earth's round, no, that can't be possible. And it's sort of always been a vogue of just sort of dismissing, and I think bringing that sort of blurry edge back, just to not to just accept everything, but to go, well, like, we don't know, maybe, like, just maybe is a nice sort of phrase.
Yeah. And so, in terms of you as a performer, I've noticed most mentalist shows, in fact, probably nearly everyone I've seen at the Fringe, always makes use of comedy. What's the role of comedy in the mentalist routine?
I think, like, my basis in comedy was I used to perform and run in an improvised comedy troupe, so it sort of, it was always that background. But I think, like, doing mind reading sort of very po-faced can either be quite aggressive, in the sense that like I'm going to be inside your mind is quite an intimate thing, so I think that like adding the comedy element to it just is a nod to say like this is okay, like I might be able to tell something about you, but it's not scary, you shouldn't be afraid. And also just because sometimes mind reading can take a while as well, if you were just sort of sat looking at a man sullenly staring at someone without really cracking jokes, I think it would get boring quite quickly and there'd be less sort of texture.
Also, I've heard from a lot of very good improvisers that they need to be silent and responsive, and I guess you need to be that too. So we're watching you on stage, but what's going on in your head a lot of the time? Are you quiet?
Yeah, this will make me sound mental, but there's like two voices in my head. So there's one sort of analysing and picking stuff up, and then there's one sort of trying to structure the show. But then, like, I'm also just, like, listening to the person. And, like, I'll ask a lot of questions of participants because I want the show to be, like, a dialogue as well. And it doesn't matter how big the room is. You can always still make it a dialogue. So just, and giving me those moments of just listening to what the other person's saying. Because, obviously, if I'm stuck in my own mind sort of guessing what they're going to be thinking, I'm not picking up on the clues of what they're doing and sort of structuring the show. So it's quite nice just to I think it's what stopped me being nervous performing as well, is that because it's just a conversation, like, I'm just talking to one other person. It just might happen that, you know, a couple of hundred people are watching that happen. So, and yeah, it becomes a lot easier if you're just sort of engaged and listening and not having to feel like you have to fill every moment.
And in terms of, again, that kind of field, some mentalists move into the hypnosis field and don't seem to have any issue, you know, getting people to, you know, bark like dogs. Other mentalists that I've met, and they're often more linked to magic as well, have got a very clear moral line about not manipulating people. Where are you?
Yeah, I think hypnosis is fascinating. And I think one of the great, like, sadness of hypnosis is that, like, it's capable of doing loads of wonderful things, but stage hypnosis has turned into, like, yeah, I can make you bark like a dog, I can make you look silly. So I performed a couple of years ago a show that, like, I'm thinking about bringing back, which was essentially a standard stage hypnosis show. But rather than making people look stupid, it was giving them, like, extra abilities. So, like, if you can unlock bits of people's brains, then why would you not make the audience look better? And I think that it's really important to me that everyone in my show feels, like, happy that they've taken part. And it's, like, it's not my belief that a lot of people that take part in stage hypnosis shows are happy afterwards, that they had to act in sort of stupid ways. So I'd always be really wary about sort of manipulating people like that. I'd much rather they went away and went, I'm really glad that I took part in that, as opposed to, oh God, don't bring that up.
Now I'm going to kind of address you as a kind of magician. So just generally in life, even sitting here now having this interview, do you respectfully switch your gift off? Or are you almost always wired? And what do you do when you're chatting to somebody and they're chatting back and you're kind of going, I know something about you now that you don't know about yourself, that if you heard it from me could have quite strong ramifications for what you do next?
Yeah, I try as much as possible to sort of switch it off. So, like, I think, like, because I've done it for so long, it's slightly ingrained in, like, who I am and the way I act and things. But I think I'm always very wary of, I call it, like, guerrilla psychic reading. So, like, I've met a lot of psychics that will just, like, walk up to me and go, I've got an impression about you, and tell you. But, like, I think it's just really impolite, and sort of politeness is a big thing for me. Like, it would be deeply impolite just to walk up to them and go, I've got an impression about you. Like, I'd always want them to have opted into, like, oh, so, like, they find out what I do and, like, oh, can you tell something about me? And if I've got something. But it's not really my place to just offer advice, because then you become like that aunt that everyone has that is always ready to tell you what you should be doing with your life. And you think, like, well, I don't.
But what do you do if you're literally here and you're overhearing two people, or you're part of a conversation and he's saying something to her and you just know he's lying?
I'll just try and not do anything as much as possible, which is sort
it's
of
a bit like Doctor Who.
Yeah, I'd rather not meddle with it. I just sort of have to leave it be. And then, like, if I'm directly involved in a situation, I can try and do those. And, like, I spent a lot of time learning sort of active listening as a therapy tool sort of thing. So I try and do that occasionally. Like, when I spot there's a mistruth or something, I'll try and lead the person into that realisation without just sort of jumping in and going, hey guys, he's lying, bye. But, like, if I'm involved in the conversation, if I can lead the person who's being lied to that realisation themselves, then I've helped, but in an unobtrusive way, that if they don't hit on that notion, then I can just leave it alone.
So not all mentalists die single.
No, hopefully not, anyway.
Final question, back to the performer then. So when you've come off stage after a fringe show and gone, that just went so well. What's been going on stage?
I think it's the audience have got really on board. Like, but the difference between, like, a good show and a tough show is how ready the audience are just to play. Because, like, the show's all about play. Like, and I want people to, like, think of fun questions and be ready to, like, have a chat wherever it's... So it's, because I do a lot of stuff on, like, the cabaret circuit in London and things, you get used to the very sort of crossed-armed, go and then show me something. So then when you get an audience that's ready, like, oh, we're here for a show, we want to have fun, like, let's get involved, then that's, like, that fills the show full of life, and then I'm going, yeah, I'm happy with that, that was a good, fun show.
And a good, fun show is on offer here at Sweet Venue, so Peter Antonio, thank you very much indeed.